Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of Responsive Design Weekly. Trying to get the levels right here. My name is Justin Avery, and I am your host and curator of the Responsive Design Weekly newsletter, a newsletter all about responsive design, funnily enough. Sorry about that, a few technical difficulties with a microphone, which I really should have sorted out before I hit the record button. But welcome. This is episode number 48. We missed a couple of weeks, but that is fine. We'll live with that. There is no guest this week, so we are going to get straight down into the nitty-gritty of what has been happening this week and a little bit of last week when it comes to building websites. So the first things that are coming up in this week's newsletter, I suppose, seeing as I'm writing it at the moment. There's some really cool events coming up pretty shortly. So the RWD Summit is coming up. I highly recommend you going along to that. It's a really cool thing because it is not something that you have to pay for an airfare to go to, or you don't have to get a hotel once you're there. You have to stop to work. It's a virtual conference. So it's on March 29th to 31st. It starts at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, so from the States. And it goes throughout the day, and so you can watch it at work or if you're at home. I know you can get like group tickets or like a company ticket, and you can kind of put it on in your boardroom and just have the whole team kind of sitting around there with laptops and do a bit of work and have a bit of a listen as well. And they've got a really cool lineup as well. People like Rachel Andrews is going to be there, Matt Griffin, Estelle Weil, Aaron Gustafson, Tammy Everts, some just really very, very smart people talking about a range of things like SaaS and Flexbox and the grid layout. Rachel's going to be talking about that. That's going to be super exciting. Responsive typography, how you design responsively for an enterprise as well. Really big organizations. Really difficult to put into some enterprise areas. What comes next is the future. So Matt Griffin has been making a video for a while now. He had it up on Kickstarter, and he's got this short documentary of what comes next is the future, where he's interviewed a whole bunch of who we would consider as like celebrities in the web industry, I would say. And so he's going to be talking about that, which is really, really cool. And there's just a whole bunch of other. Performance is going to be another big one. What mobile is doing. It's very American, mobile. And talking about responsive email. There's a whole bunch of stuff. It's really, really cool. So I highly recommend picking up a ticket for that. If I'll look up this as we talk about something else, but I do have a special deal coming up where you can get a discount on that, actually. So let me just quickly, this is great radio you get when I just look things up. This is fantastic radio. I'm really sorry. But okay, so you will get a discount. And if you use if you use the code RWD Weekly, no spaces, RWD Weekly, you will get 20% off your ticket when you sign up. So definitely go check that out. Sounds like a sponsored post, really, doesn't it? It's not at all. I really love the RWD Summit. Christopher Schmidt from Environments for Humans and Ari Styles, two wonderful people who put on such good conferences. There was a recent one on the SVG Summit, which was just awesome. I saw Sarah Drasner's talk on animating SVGs, and it is as good for designers as it is for developers as well. I really, really liked that one. So that's one thing that's going on. I saw on Twitter this week as well, Smashing Magazine. If you're not following them, you should try and check them out. But they had a couple of Twitter polls going on. I really like the concept of the Twitter poll because anyone can see the results, which is a bonus because usually you rely on the people taking the polls to kind of produce the results at the end. But if you participate in it, you get this nice message going, hey, you participated in a poll X number of days ago. Here are the results. And you get to see, which is quite cool. But Vitaly published on it, do you actively use responsive images in production, and then whether, like, do you use source set, do you use sizes, do you use picture? And the other one, the other question was around, if you do use responsive images in production, do you use picture fill as a fallback? And there's a couple of options there as well. So I encourage you, go to at Smashing Mag and find those questions. Smashing Magazine always tweet out a whole bunch of awesome stuff anyway. So if you're not following him, jump on their bandwagon as well. Another conference which is coming up shortly, again, actually, this is by Christopher Schmidt again, but this is an in-person conference. And it's not so much for the conference, but if you are keen to get into a speaking gig and start trialing standing up in front of people and talking, it may be your absolute worst nightmare, may sound like torture to you. It's actually a lot of fun, even though it's terrifying in the entire lead up to it. Once you get started, you kind of forget, and then all of a sudden you're at the end and you feel like really, really good that you were able to stand up and talk about the web and teach people what you know. Rest assured, what you know is more than you think. I probably don't know half the things that you know, and I would love to listen to you stand up on stage and talk about stuff. But so the CSS DevConf in 2016, it's not until the 17th to 19th of October, but they are open for speakers. So they're doing a call of speakers. They invite a whole bunch of keynote people to go and talk. So I think Rachel Andrews doing that. I think they've got Chris Coyer and someone else from memory. Are definitely speaking, Trent Walton, I think it is. And then they open up the floor, and I think it's like a double blind acceptance. So you write your talk name, your topic, and you do a bit of a briefing about what it's going to be about. And you there's no name attached to it. They don't know where you're coming from in the world. They don't know like your history, your experience. They don't know anything about you. And they look at it and they open it up to a vote, like which sounds like the best session. And then I think it goes through another round where they look at it again once it goes through the next one. But all the information is actually there, but it's open. They are looking for speakers to come in and say, I want to speak. The deadline is the 1st of April, so get in there quick. You only have to speak for 45 minutes. Sounds like a long time. It goes a lot faster than you realize, and you can't actually say more than really maybe five things in 45 minutes, or at least I can't, and you probably know that because you listen to me ramble on this podcast quite a bit. But yeah, definitely go and check out CSS DevConf. The URL is lanyard.com/2016/CSS DevConf. And get out to the Alamo, get out to the States, do a talk. It'll be awesome. What else has happened? Oh, yeah, so I saw a thing on Twitter today. My friend Chris Bunnell sent me a direct message, and he said, I won't say what he said. He just said, I assume you've seen this, and then like an expletive. And I checked it out, and it's really cool. So it's Google have released a thing called Resizer. So we are onto responsive design stuff now. So if you go to design.google.com/resizer, it's really cool, right? So they've produced this thing which will show, you enter a URL into it, and it shows that web page in three different sizes, like a desktop, a laptop or a tablet, and then a mobile phone. And then you can, like, just show me the desktop, just show me the tablet, just show me the mobile phone. And then it gives you, I think, a few key widths. So it's like, show me it at 300 pixels wide, show me it at 400, show me it at 600, show me it at 1,000. And it just previews your site. And I hadn't seen it. And then when I jumped on to my Twitter to have a look, I also got a message where I found another tweet from Boris Shapira. And Boris said, the inception begins. And I was really chuffed because Boris had put an image up or a link up comparing the resizer from Google with the amiresponsivedesign.is site that that we built a few years ago now. If you haven't seen that, mine's way better, and I had it first. It's for different things, really. Like, I think the Google one is more, it's aimed more at testing, perhaps, and to see how things lay out. The one that I built, the mi.responsivedesign.is, is not designed for testing. It was more to convey the idea of what responsive design means to clients. So you visit your site, and there's a bookmark that you can press, or you can put your URL in the same way that Google does it. And it basically loads your site into four different sizes, one on an iMac screen, one on a Mac screen, a Mac Pro, one on an iPad, and one on an iPhone. I went with those because they were the kind of devices that I was using. And Google have probably gone for the more the Android feel. And with the MI Responsive, you can kind of drag the devices around so you can rearrange them. I really did it because I was doing a lot of examples on the site of other people's responsive designs, and I wanted a really quick way to take screenshots. And I was terrible. The original thing, I was resizing the browser to be really small, and then I'd take a screenshot of that, and then I'd make it a bit wider, and I'd take a screenshot of that, and a bit wider, and a screenshot, and a bit wider. And then I would take those, and I would put them as layers into Photoshop. And within Photoshop, I had other layers, which were the screens, the screen chrome, like the devices. And then I would position those images within the devices, and then arrange them both together, and move them around. And then I would export to PNG, or export to JPEG, and upload on the site. And I was like, this is taking forever, because I'm really crap at Photoshop. So this device, Am I Responsive, then just took all that hard work and heavy lifting out for me. It was already there. You can move the devices around, and it just used iframes to position them. Google's one's a lot more professionally done and is probably sustained a lot more testing. Like I said, mine it was more for fun, but I was really chuffed to see that it was like compared against them. I was like, that's really cool. My friend Chris is like, they stole your idea, man. I'm like, no, they really didn't. But that's really cool. Go check out design.google.com/resizer and have a bit of a play with that. What else is happening this week? Tim Cadlick has written a follow-up to an article from a little while ago. And the follow-up was around the AMP pages. So this is the accelerated mobile page thing that Google were doing, which if you did a search for something on... it was their answer to like Facebook Insta articles. So when people... The massive big complaint that everyone had, and Facebook wanted to do this because they were like, the web's too slow, everyone's waiting too long for pages to load, so we are going to grab all the articles from all the sites and we're going to display them on Facebook as Insta articles, so you never need leave the hive that is Facebook. Now, I'm sure they had great intentions for this, and it was more focused around the performance, but equally, you know, it was really focused around people not leaving their ecosystem, I think. So it was a bit advantageous for both parties, getting faster articles. And then, of course, like Google had said, oh, if you're going to do a search and we have articles that are matching your searches, then if you have built them in these AMP pages, then we will show their version of instant articles. It'll load incredibly fast. It'll be a much better experience. But they kind of forced this. It must... it's so stupid. The actual framework that you have to build your AMP pages in, the template, ironically, to build a super fast template, you have to kind of like display none all of it and then load in a bunch of JavaScript to get the page to be displayed. So it kind of goes against the grain of everything that we've been trying to push for a long time. But their idea is good. The idea of trying to make a faster web is a great idea. Now, what Tim has written about this week is he just thinks they've missed the mark. They're after the right outcome, but are maybe going about it in the wrong way. So rather than prescribe a certain template that it needs to be written in, and a specific language and stuff, I think what he is proposing is that we have a standardized alternative to AMP. And he's kind of his idea, what was he actually calling it? He's called it the CPP. What is the CPP? Again, this is great radio. This is awesome. Content performance policies. And so it's kind of like providing a standardization to verify that your page is doing what it says it's doing. So you might put verification in the header to say, an example here he uses is, I'm not going to hijack any scroll events. So you put that as kind of a promise in the head, and then the browser or whatever thing is going to suck that page in, will go, okay, I will use you because you have stated this. And if you do try and do any of this scroll jacking or anything, it'll just ignore it or block it or block the article. So they've got a really basic thing. He's working with Yo of Vice, who took some time off and did this small little thing called the picture element and source set and brought responsive images to the web. He's kind of smart. He knows what he's doing quite a bit. So they're working on it. They have this content performance policy draft, this W3C kind of WCAG draft up. And then they're working through it. It's incredibly early. But I think if you are at all keen to build a faster web, you want to get involved with this stuff. Things like AMP and Instant Articles kind of came around. They are developed in this sort of closed area of corporations. And this is your opportunity. If you have good ideas and you want to be part of the discussion and where we get to, then I highly recommend you you contribute to that as well. I've also been doing a lot of stuff with AMP this week. Well, I'd say a lot of stuff. AMP pages are now being displayed. You can see whether how well you're doing it in Google Webmaster Tools. So if you go to your Google Webmaster Tools, or is it called the Search Console? Yeah, so it's called the Google Search Console now, but it's still at google.com/webmasters/tools. If you go in there, you can now see whether or not you're ranking for AMP pages. So if you go to the search experience or search appearance, at the bottom there is a thing called accelerated mobile pages. And when I saw this, I was like, oh, awesome. I set my site up with accelerated mobile pages as soon as I heard about it, because I thought, you know, why not? I may as well. I'll jump on the bandwagon and see the more things that can consume the content that I have, the better, surely. There was just a whole bunch of errors. It's like, Google is indexing 0 of your pages and 71 errors. Go fix them. So I kind of went through and I looked at it, and there's a discrepancy between what the Google AMP pages say you need and what you actually need when it comes to delivering it. So I spent a fair bit of time going through and correcting things. So within the actual, when you create an AMP page, you need to define a whole bunch of stuff. What you end up having to define, even though the AMP page doesn't specify it all, when it, like the tutorial for it, you need to be very, very, very accurate with the schema that you use. So you're actually using the schema.org schema type news article. And so you need a whole bunch of things, even though they don't actually list it in the AMP page, but I worked this out through trial and error. But you need to define that it's a news article, then you need to define that it's a web page, then you need to pass the URL of the web page, then you need to pass the headline, so the name of the page, the date that it was published in ISO 8601 format. You need to pass an author. And within the author, you need to say what type of author it is. And so for me, it was type person, name is Justin Avery. And then you have to include publisher, and then you have to set type as organization. So then I said name is responsivedesign.is. Then you have to declare a logo for the organization as well. You have to set that type to an image object, and then you have to put a URL in. And then the URL is only going to work if you have a maximum height of 60. That took a long time. So it has to have a maximum height of 60 and then whatever width. But then the image itself, you can't just say that the proportion is about the same. It has to be that size. Then you have to include a date modified as well. So once you declare your date modified, which also has to be in the ISO 8601 format, then you include, you have to include an image with it as well. And then you have to say image, and then the type is an image object. Then you have to include the image object. And again, it has to be over 636 pixels wide, can be any height, has to be over 636 pixels high, wide. And it has to be that exact width as well. Like, it has to be more than that. So you have to specify the exact width of the image, not say, well, just stretch it and I'll say it's 636. So there, that's the schema stuff that you need to include. So all of that stuff gets added in the head, which is just crazy. And then you have to insert, so that's just a script tag, and then you have to add a style where the body has an opacity of 0, and then you set a no script tag to say the body has an opacity of 1, and then you drop another script in, which is the AMP project JavaScript version 0, really. And then once all that's been done, then you can start the body of your site. They also just released, you can now include analytics on your AMP page. So you have like a little a snippet called AMP-analytics, and then you can drop your analytics in. They recommend that you create a new profile to include your analytics, so don't use your existing website profile that you're using. So you can still use the same, what do they break them into? I only just recently did this today, but I still can't remember, and this is still just getting better for radio. I'm really sorry. So you have an account, and my account's like responsive web design, and then you have properties, and one of my properties is responsivedesign.is, and I've created another property called rwdamp. And then you get a specific ID, like UA, blah, 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 blah. Mine's -5. And then you can include that. So that gets included at the top of the body in the body tag, or just after the body tag, I should say. And then you need to trigger it to fire it. So you trigger on visible, request a page view, and then you have to pass in some more variables, which will be just the name of the page and the URL of the document as well, which is just the URL. And then after that, I pass in the header one, and then I pass in the contents of the actual news story as well. And I think I needed to include, I could be wrong here, but I think I needed to include an AMP image as part of it as well. So I've dropped that in there as well. The other thing, the most annoying thing for me is that my articles, or the articles that I write for the responsive design site and the news updates, most of the content just come from one keyword. So I use a CMS, and the keyword is asset content. So everything's an asset in the CMS. And that just spits out the contents of the WYSIWYG, or all of the WYSIWYG. So if I can have multiple WYSIWYG items, but they all get spat out as one thing called asset contents. Now, within that, I drop in a whole bunch of images as well. So you think WordPress, when you have like the page content or the post content, you have images within there as well, and you would just drop those images. Well, when you use the keyword to spit it out, those images come out with it. And unfortunately, you can't just use an image tag in AMP documents unless you wrap it with a no script tag. So fortunately, the CMS that I use allows you to include keyword modifiers. So I drop the keyword for the asset contents, and then I can modify it. So I say wherever I say image, IMG, replace it with AMP-IMG, which is really annoying. And then also I wrap all my images in figure tags. So I have a figure, and then I have the image, and then I have a fig caption to caption the image, and then I close it with a figure as well. But it won't let you use figures or fig captions as container elements within the AMP document. So I also have to run another keyword modifier to find all of the instances of the word figure and replace that with like a paragraph, like a P, and then look for fig caption as well and replace that with a P. So it's a bit of a pain in the butt, I gotta say, because also this is so rudimentary that if I use IMG anywhere in the document, it's going to replace it with AMP IMG. So luckily there's not, I won't really say image too often, but if I've said image in the document, I suppose that will replace it with AMP image. But it's just a, this is the thing, right? It's a pain in the butt to update content that is within the WYSIWYG with these new tags that need to be included just so this will work. Like it won't ignore it. It just won't work. It fails, and therefore Google refused to index it. Therefore, it will not be shown for search results on mobile devices in this little instant article kind of thing. And that's kind of like really frustrating and annoying. But that's just the way it is. And I think this is the sort of thing that Tim wants to get over. Like, leave it up to the authors and the web developers to decide how they want to create their content, and then they can say, right, I am going to adhere to these guidelines and take it or leave it, and then see how you go. But it kind of that brings me on. So this whole thing of manipulating this AMP document, this new template. So the way I've got it running is that the templates and the views that are kind of applied to the URLs, I can customize them by adding some query strings to the end. So I like just say question mark design equals AMP design and layout equals AMP layout. And that will apply a different template to the content, as it were, and then serve that up. And I've always been a big pusher of like separating out your content into chunks as much as possible. So I came from like an information management background where the ability to report on information and split information out into easily reusable and identifiable chunks was like a big part of it. And so when I got more into building out these huge, big, like large scale websites, I was really pedantic about not having chunks of like huge chunks of content, WYSIWYG content. Although you can't really get past the fact that you have an entire article. You can't break them into paragraphs, really. It's not really practical. But the other bits are really important to break out, things like keywords, or for the resources page, I have separate elements for resource name, resource URL, GitHub resource URL, download resource URL, resource owner URL, resource description, and then there's the main and resource image, resource tags, resource category, and then there's like a WYSIWYG where I just talk about the resource. And then I've got a separate one, which is like resource code pen, which is what keeps the code pen embed if I've got one for it. So each of these individual chunks for the resource are then able to be separated out and used for whatever kind of template I need. If I want to change the way the page is laid out, I have all these individual elements that a designer can go, well, you know what, I think we should move this stuff here and move that stuff there. And I'm like, that's fine, because these are all individual chunks and we can do whatever we want with them. So by breaking them down into really small chunks of information and not sort of lumping them together, I can do these things with the AMP pages. You can use things like putting them into, like, use microdata. You can use them in your meta tags if you're pushing things to social as well, where you might want to have different bits of information in different social networks. So just by chunking it out allows you to have a bit more control. So when things like AMP come along, then you're not like stuck with a complete rebuild just to get something out there. And that's another article that's on this week, which is content modeling with Jekyll. So it's really focused on just Jekyll, but the whole idea of content modeling, I think, is a really, really key concept, and more of that should be done as well. The last thing I think I'll mention for this week, have I covered everything that I wanted to? Oh, there's two more things. There's a really great article from the Cloud4 team. Jason Grigsby and the rest of the team, they brought us the Responsive Field Day last year, which was like the American version of the Responsive Day Out that Jeremy Keith and Clear Left brought us in the UK. And Jason Grigsby also wrote the really awesome Responsive Images 101 set of articles. There's like 10 sets, instructions. It's a great tutorial talking you through responsive images. So they're doing a complete redesign, and they're doing it out in the open, which is really cool. They've started that, and they've got things like, what have they got? They're using, I had it here, it's gone. Oh, no, it's gone. They are using a style guide to get started, but they're building it up in the open. Definitely go check that out. I think it's going to be a really, really good set of posts coming up about it. In fact, they've been posting some really good stuff lately. Go into the Cloud4 blog and check out the responsive processing, the sprints they're doing. It's just a really it's a really great resource. They're churning out a lot of great stuff there. And finally, I'll mention too that Majingo, which is an online course system, provides you with courses. They're offering free courses at the moment, so you can start any course for free. You don't need to sign up, you don't need to put any payments down at all. You should definitely go and check that out. They've got one on responsive web design, which is really cool. I think Sophie Shepherd did that, and they've got another one on web performance testing as well. But that's it for me. I mean, keep going on. I can keep talking for ages, as you all very well know, but we'll leave it there. We're trying to catch up with a few guests next week. It probably won't be next week. It'll be the week after that. But I hope to be back again next week talking about some more stuff that's been happening in the responsive design world, or just the general world of web design and development as well. But until then, thank you very much for joining in. Go and subscribe at responsivedesignweekly.com, and you can get all these newsletters each week with a whole backlog of 197 editions of links that you can go and check out. Have a look at the resources and the examples and the patterns on responsivedesign.is. If you're looking for some notebooks, head over to backpocket.co and pick yourself up a sweet set of responsive design notebooks, all about the three tenets of responsive design. Yeah, that's about it. Rate us up in iTunes or whichever way you are listening to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Do share it with your friends, and any feedback is good feedback. You can grab it at reswebdes, reswebdes, probably the worst Twitter handle I could have picked, but there you go, like responsive web design, but just shortened, because Australians shorten everything. So at reswebdes, yeah, leave some feedback, let us know what you want to hear about, what you don't want to hear about, and until next week, stay responsive and enjoy your weekends. Cheers, everyone. Bye.